You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Even though COVID-19 seems to be not hitting children's bodies as hard as it's hitting adults, it is not being so kind to children's minds. No one is immune to the stress that comes with a pandemic and then the related quarantining. However, many health experts believe that children may be at a particular risk. I mean, think about it. Kids already live in a universe that is out of their control, and they can become especially shaken when the things that they count on to their world order are frankly just blown up. And we're seeing that happen to children all across the country, but here in Idaho as well. Joining us live today to talk more about this is Dr. Paula Griffith, a child and adolescent psychiatrist with St. Luke's Behavioral Health Services in Twin Falls. Dr. Griffith, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So as we all know, for the last 5 months, kids all across the country have been out of the traditional school environment. Most have been away from their friends. Summer has been nothing, but you know, they're nothing normal about summer. And now there's all of this uncertainty around the school year starting. So I'm curious as to what you've been seeing in regards to how children, you know, whether they're younger or into adolescence, have been dealing with all of this.
Yeah, I think that you're right, Gemma, that kids are struggling with the changes in the world, and sort of life as normal right now is very different than probably anything they have lived through in their lifetime, or anything that many of us parents have lived through in our lifetimes. In my practice, both children and adolescents have been expressing a lot of worry and uncertainty right now about the future and the ramifications of changes to their day-to-day lives, which for children, a huge portion of their day-to-day lives is school. That's the job for a child or an adolescent. So the uncertainty there can certainly be a challenge both for them and their families, who may rely on school for childcare and to allow parents to work and meet the needs of the family financially as well.
Well, and you know, I think we hear this all the time, like, oh, you know, kids are so resilient, right? If there's a crisis, whether maybe there's a divorce in the family or, something happens to kind of shake that balance up. It's like, well, kids are resilient. They are. I mean, to a point, but is that a misnomer that we just kind of throw out there about children?
I think it's pretty accurate that children are resilient. I think also that children right now are looking to their parents and their loved ones to sort of model resilience for them, to help them make sense of a confusing time in their lives. And that can help bolster children and families' resilience. So in some ways, yeah, children are resilient. And also we can help strengthen that resilience to help them come through this in a way that is less impactful for them down the line in the future.
So can we talk a little bit about that, about the modeling behavior of parents and caregivers? Because I know even just with my own kids that, you know, if I have a certain attitude about something down the road, my kids have a certain attitude about something, you know, good, positive or negative. So what as parents should we be doing, you know, specifically like in our language, you know, things like that, to give our kids maybe a little bit more calm?
I think that every family takes a different approach to how to express and model coping skills effectively within that family or their community or culture. That being said, there are some things that families and children can do to bolster resilience right now. And you're right, I think kids are so perceptive and they do pick up on the emotional tone of the grownups in the room and often model attitudes after that. So one thing that I think is helpful for children is really just to allow them space to share questions, uncertainties, and to speak with them in developmentally appropriate language and truthful answers at the level of what we know and what we can answer for them to help dispel some of the myths or fear or uncertainties that can be building up in their mind. For little kids, that may look like talking about, you know, ways that their life might be different, or just giving them space to ask questions about what's a germ.
Mm. Right. Well, and it's interesting because this morning my 8-year-old, he's been complaining of having a bit of a sore throat. Yes. And I know, and he's, you know, and so this morning he comes in and he goes, Mom, he goes, my throat's feeling better. And I said, well, that's good. And he goes, and it's not COVID. And it kind of made me take a step back because I've been very conscious of how we talk about this in our home. And I looked at him and I said, well, were you worried that that's what it would be? And he goes, no, I just don't want you to worry. And that just kind of hit, I know, but I mean, it's, and I said, well, and I, you know, I was like, well, Mommy's not worried about it. You know, it's probably allergies. And he, you know, and he went on his way, but you know, is that kind of too, is like allowing them to just kind of talk through whatever they might be feeling, even if it is like a physical symptom or something like that?
I think that's appropriate to allow them to come to parents and loved ones with questions about what they may be experiencing or what they notice, you know, friends or families experiencing or the changes in their world. I have toddlers. So I have a 3.5-year-old who sometimes when I tell her we can't go do something or we can't go on a trip to visit somewhere, she'll ask me, oh, because of the big germ.
Right.
And so we talk about, you know, what we can do to safely enjoy things that we enjoy, like playing outside, because that's less likely to interact or impact the health of those around us. And yes, that there are germs, and some of them are helpful to our bodies and some are not. And COVID is a germ, and we're going to do what we can to help reduce the spread of that. Kids, I think, are really often very willing to want to help others. So sometimes little kids respond well to talking about, at least in our household and in the children in my practice, we try to help the health of our communities, like we call grandparents in our family, nanny and papa. So to help the nannies and the papas be healthy as well, not just kids, because kids are very likely to be physically well if they get sick with COVID. And I can comfortably reassure my daughter of that. At the same time, what things can we do to help our minds be healthy too? So sometimes we'll brainstorm together.
And then what about things like, I mean, what about those kiddos who maybe have already have a bit of anxiety or maybe, you know, a bit of depression? Have you seen an uptick in that or in, you know, just kids having more, maybe anxiety rather than depression?
I don't think we have any numbers to reflect on because this is such a rapidly evolving situation. But anecdotally, normally summer is a pretty calm time in terms of outpatient child and adolescent psychiatric practice. And it has been a fairly busy summer in my experience. So I do think kids are expressing stress and anxiety, and many kids express that in different ways. For example, a lot of kids get tummy aches when they're stressed out. So there are ways that we as parents and as caregivers can clue into different ways that children might be showing us that they have some stress. It's also an opportunity to talk to them kind of and consciously work on, okay, you're showing me that your body is stressed. What can we do to help that? Can we take a deep breath? Can we take a break and listen to some music? Can we do something to help our bodies and our families process what we're all going through together?
And then what about loneliness? And what I mean by that is, even though, I mean, in home environments where there is not a lot of disruption, because we do know that we've seen an uptick in cases of child abuse, and we're going to be talking about that more in depth on the show next week. But even in homes where, you know, it's a safe environment, kids have been taken out of their normalcy, right? I mean, school abruptly ended, kids went online, you know, a lot of kids haven't seen friends for, you know, 5 months. You know, how do we deal with that? I mean, because loneliness, it's real. It doesn't matter if you've been stuck at home with your family, you still might be lonely.
You're right, definitely. And I see this expressed more by teens who I work with. certainly people are feeling lonely right now. And yet I'm so glad that we live in the age of modern technology where we can pick up a phone and FaceTime our friends or have, you know, a party on a streaming service and watch a movie together. It's not as good as being in the same room, at least not for me, right? Humans are social creatures. And yet we're able, through technology or through some creative structure in our lives, have some amount of social connection if we consciously choose to foster that. So I know some families who do outdoor sort of neighbor movie nights where I'll sit on my side of the property and you sit on yours and we'll project a movie in the backyard, for example. So there are ways that we can reduce our risk while still fostering healthy connections. And you're right, that's critical for emotional well-being.
I never ever thought I would say thank goodness for video games and where they can talk to their friends, right? I mean, if you'd asked me 6 months ago that I would have allowed my kids to do that and do it to the extent they do, I would have never believed you. But thank goodness for that. Before I let you go, though, what are just some concrete suggestions for parents, especially of school-age children, where we are getting set to go into uncharted territory when it comes to going back to school, because we don't know what that might look like. And even if you do know what that might look like, it could change within days or weeks of being back in the school environment.
Yeah, you're right. I think being flexible is going to be a huge component of adapting to the new academic environment as we move forward. So families discussing ahead of time, hey, here's what we think school is going to look like right now, but that may change and we'll let you know as soon as we know to reassure children they will be included and informed of the upcoming plans and changes, which can be a source of stress for kids. Also doing concrete practical things to help them prepare. So for example, can we practice wearing masks before we go back to school? Maybe screen time should be mask time so kids become more accustomed to wearing it. Maybe they can help pick out a mask or decorate a mask to help them feel more comfortable and excited about that prospect. While parents also model the tone of this being something helpful and positive we're doing for our communities, our friends, our family. Choosing to practice things that might be a change down the line can reduce the stress when kids have to do that in real time when school starts.
I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk about this. I think as parents and caregivers, there is some stress in all of us right now as we navigate this. So just really appreciate your guidance and what you've been seeing in your practice as well. So thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We've been talking with Dr. Paula Griffith. She is a child and adolescent psychiatrist with St. Luke's Behavioral Health Services in Twin Falls. We'll have more Idaho Matters right after this.